This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. DC 37 is New York City's largest public employee union with 125,000 members and nearly 50,000 retirees. We're part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME. We're on the air Sundays at 8 p.m. We rebroadcast on Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m. We're also available as a podcast. Simply go to the podcast app on your smartphone or tablet, search for DC 37 State of the Union, and you can check out our website, www.dc37.net. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you have any comments about our show or would like to promote a community event, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. That's State of the Union, one word, at dc37.net. Before we begin talking to our guests this evening, I want to talk about something that I'm reading this on the way into the studio, and I cannot believe that this happened, and I just wanted to get this out there so that the world knows. The House of Representatives this week passed something called the Taxpayer First Act, which includes a provision that would bar the Internal Revenue Service from creating a free electronic tax filing program. So this is tax time, and what has happened is, according to ProPublica, which is a nonprofit organization that does investigative journalism, that the for-profit tax preparation industry, the H&R Blocks and the TurboTax people, they have sought to keep the IRS from creating a free electronic tax filing system. And last week, the House Ways and Means Committee, led by Representative Richard Neal, who is a Democrat from Massachusetts, passed this bill that, among the provisions, makes it illegal for the IRS to create its own online system of tax filing. That's got to be one of the worst ideas I've heard in a very long time. And I thought to myself, why don't you tell folks about this? Why don't we talk about this? And, you know, I don't know if you know how to, you know how to pick up the phone. You can call congressional offices through the switchboard. The U.S. House of Representatives, you can reach them by calling 202-225-3121. You can reach the U.S. Senate by calling 202-224-3121. And you can ask the operator to connect you to the individual office of your representative. And folks, you should know who your representatives are. In a world of Google, if you don't know, go to the internet, get online, put in your zip code and ask, who is my representative? And let folks know, this is not a done deal. This is something that the House Ways and Means Committee has passed. This is something that has to go through the Senate, obviously. But the gist of this, the idea that the for-profit tax preparation industry got the U.S. House Ways and Means Committee to pass a bill that has a provision that says we will not provide this service for free. You know, they're saying we're going to prohibit the IRS from providing free online electronic service. So I just, you know, it's one of those things, you see it in the paper and you go, you get mad. This is the I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore moment. And I'm hoping that listeners, if you agree with me, again, call your representative, 202-225-3121. That's the U.S. House of Representatives switchboard. And U.S. senators, you can call them at 202-224-3121. Just say, you know, listen, I heard about this. Tell me more about this. And if it is what I just said it is, tell them that you're opposed to it. Tonight, we are joined by Costa Constantinides, who represents the New York City Council's 22nd District and is also the chair of the City Council Environmental Protection Committee. Welcome to the show, sir.
Hi, thank you for having me on.
Well, big news is, I mean, we're en route to something very important, contained in Intro 1253, talking about trying to address climate change doing so legislatively. Let's talk a little bit about that. Let's talk a lot about that.
Great. So this bill, when we do pass it next week, will be the largest emissions reduction policy in the history of not just New York City, but any city anywhere. We will be getting a reduction in large buildings. And when I say this, it's going to sound odd. There are only about 50,000 of these buildings in the city of New York out of 1.1 million. But these 50,000 buildings account for 30% of our overall emissions. So we are going to get a 40% reduction by 2030 from these buildings. We're going to get an 80% reduction by 2050, and that is going to help our city be greener, more sustainable in the largest way in the history of any city anywhere.
Big efforts don't move not smoothly. They don't move without opposition. I am sure that there are folks out there who have tried very hard to sabotage this effort for whatever reason. How do we push back against those efforts?
You know, we know that climate change is real. We know that through the International Report on Climate Change, Donald Trump's own report that came out on Thanksgiving weekend, through the Citi report, we have 11 years to make an impact on climate change. And this bill, along with the other bills that we're passing, making it easier for large wind, the city coming up with a plan to replace gas-powered power plants with solar renewables. The way we fight back is standing with our allies like DC 37 that have been amazing. Henry Garrido and the entire team at DC 37 have been visionaries and standing and recognizing the dire fight that is climate change. And, you know, we need to stand united with one another to get this done. That's how we're going to win.
There is, whenever we're trying to achieve real change and big change, you're up against so many different forces. How do you even, as chair of the Environmental Protection Committee, how did you come to saying, this is how we're going to do this? This is a big process. This is a big effort. And how did you, how do you begin taking the steps to do something like this?
You know, we looked at this, where can we make the biggest impact for real people? You know, we've seen the models that have said that there could potentially be, by the middle of this century, 100,000 climate refugees in the tri-state area. We've seen the numbers say how neighborhoods like the Rockaways and Coney Island could disappear from the maps. When you hear that sort of dire reporting, scientific reporting with data, that it's a sobering thought. So we need to go where the emissions are. That's why we did this bill, because this is going to be going after the largest polluters in New York City.
And, you know, when you talk about flooding in the Rockaways and Coney Island, the information I've seen is that by 2030, virtually all communities located along our coastlines will be in huge jeopardy for flooding and catastrophic flooding. So, I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot of people who would be affected by this.
And these are mostly communities who, communities of color, communities that cannot afford to move, right? Who have the least ability. We saw with Hurricane Sandy that it hit public housing in Southeast Queens and in the Rockaways and Red Hook in real ways, and put, lives were lost. We can't relocate, these communities. We need to make sure that we build a stronger, resilient, sustainable city that protects every resident.
And District Council 37 was underwater for Sandy. I mean, that was closed the building, the headquarters, for months, for 8 or 9 months. I mean, it really disrupts your life when these storms hit. This is also connected to a new economy. A new, what are the jobs of the future going to look like? So there is a combination between the environment, what's environmentally sound, and what is going to be the economy of the future. Talk a little bit about that, if you would.
Now, we expect over 20,000 solar installers in the state of New York over the next couple of years. We're expecting from this bill thousands upon thousands of good middle-class jobs doing these retrofits to be created. So this bill is not only going to make our environment cleaner, but it's also going to help us, you know, rethink our city, help us change our economy in a greener way that's green for our residents as well, not just environmentally, but in their pocket, getting real dollars and middle-class jobs. You know, this is our opportunity to think about how a city should look in the 21st century economically and environmentally. So, you know, this is a good starting point to get this done.
We're talking with City Council Environmental Protection Committee Chair Costa Constantinides. We're talking about Intro 1253. It is now, as we're having this conversation, it is, what is today, April 11th? Is that correct? So this is something that now on April 13th at, which is the day before this show actually airs, there will have been a expo at an Earth Day expo at DC 37. You will have spoken at that expo, and I want to congratulate you on having done a terrific job of speaking at the expo, which hasn't yet happened. That's a little problem we have with recording shows ahead of events. When we come together to talk about environmental issues, and we are talking with a wide range of New Yorkers, how do we frame the conversation so that everyone feels as if they can be part of the solution?
You know, we are all living climate change right now. I think that's, you know, we keep talking about, you know, we're waiting for climate change to happen. It's happening right now. We've seen every year be hotter. We've seen weather events becoming stronger. We've seen more New Yorkers die and get sick from heat-related illness every year. We're all part of this. We're all in this together. So I think, you know, the only solution, you know, everyone should recognize that first, that we are all living in a world that is already affected by climate change, and it's already part of our everyday life. And then secondly, there's all pieces that we can do, whether it's you know, things in our own neighborhoods like recycling and turning off those lights. But there's also bigger things that we can all do together. And, you know, that's what DC 37 has been such a great supporter of, is, you know, is the big things. And I think as a union, as the largest, you know, municipal union in New York City, you know, when we stand together, that's how we win. That's how we each make an impact, is making our, amplifying our voice, holding us elected officials accountable, and saying that we need to have this bill passed. We need to have a focus on green issues in the 21st century, because New York City needs to continue in the way that we know it.
And to, you know, we do a show that's on the air, talking to a lot of folks, to get the input from them on support for this. Who should people call to say we support this? How should we contact? How does the public let its voice be heard on this?
I mean, it's any which way. Reach out to your elected official and voice your support, whether that's through your phone, whether that's on email. Make those reach outs, which are always welcome, right? Like social media, you know, Twitter. I know that my Twitter handle is Costa4NY with the number 4, NY. So it's Costa4NY. So, you know, reach out on social media, on via email, via phone. Let your voice be heard. Because the other side, who doesn't want this to happen, they're well-funded, and their voice is going to be heard. We need to make sure all of our voices are heard.
City Council Environmental Protection Committee Chair Costa Constantinides, thank you very much for joining us this evening. You know, the struggle continues. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for having me on, and I always appreciate your great efforts and appreciate DC37's great efforts. So thank you very much for having me on.
We'll be right back.
Mm-hmm. Were you a September 11th responder or volunteer? Were you present at the dust cloud on 9/11? Do you live, work, or go to school in the New York City disaster area on 9/11 or in the following months? Do you now suffer from problems such as chronic cough, shortness of breath, anxiety, depression, or have other symptoms? If so, you may be eligible for the World Trade Center Health Program and could receive medical monitoring and treatment at no out-of-pocket cost to you. To learn more about the program and get an application, go to www.cdc.gov/WTC or call 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. Call today. 1-888-982-4748. 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care.
We're back. This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. Brandon Weber writes about economics, labor union history, and working people. And he is the author of Class War USA, Dispatches from Workers' Struggles in American History, from Haymarket Books. He's written for The Progressive, for Upworthy, Big Think, and many other online publications. He's also been a union activist for more than 30 years. Welcome to State of the Union, Brandon.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
You know, I was reading Class War USA, and I was really, you know, we've been trying to accomplish something on this show, which is talking to listeners about, especially young folks, about the history of the struggles. You know, one of the expressions is the struggle continues. The struggle has always continued. And trying to put the current times into perspective. And boy, this book really helps do that in a very accessible way, because you're telling different stories and you're not doing 400 pages on a particular struggle. You're showing the range of things that have been happening going back, you know, a couple hundred years.
Yeah, the fact is, history of the labor movement is filled with stories like the ones that are in this book. And you know, when I grew up in grade school and high school, they taught us that history was made by wealthy white people, white guys, usually white men. You know, this rich white guy did this, this rich white guy did that, and that's how we got everything that we have in the world. And we did the work. We created all of that wealth for people, working people did. And so a number of the stories that I have in the book, I actually originally created for social media, and they went pretty big. Got a lot of eyes on those. And so that got me thinking, this was actually way before the 2016 election, got me thinking about putting that into, you know, kind of summarizing the struggle of what working people have been through down through history. And mind you, there's another, I mean, I think there's almost 30 stories about that in this book. And there's another couple hundred we could tell, right?
Right, so, absolutely.
But I was inspired, well, as the election happened, and we know what happened since then, I decided this was a good time to talk about the fight back and the fact that we have been up against a wall before at times in history, and working people got together, and they fought back, and they won, even if it took 5-10 years. Sometimes these were some battles that actually didn't end up so well initially, but then they won eventually.
And
that's kind of the spirit.
And some of those, tragically, many of those battles were bloody.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean, Ludlow is a good example in Ludlow, Colorado, the mining country out there. I mean, what ended up happening after the workers were on strike for several months, they set up tent camps because, of course, they were thrown out of the company towns that they lived in. And, the company thugs went and shot through the tents, set them on fire, killed a number of people. You know, these things have happened. They've happened through history. It's amazing to me that when those things did happen during the time, I mean, these were the real struggles of working people. If 14 people died on the picket line in New York City tomorrow, that would be huge news, right?
Right.
But this was commonplace back then.
Right.
Commonplace.
Right. You know, and some of it, you know, much of it was interesting to me because I was not aware. I was aware of some level, for example, about the Pullman porters, but I had no idea that African American women called a general strike in 1881. And you describe it, you know, very succinctly in your book. And let's talk a little bit about that and any other story that you want to tell from the book. What was the Atlanta washerwomen strike about?
So, I mean, they at that time in the United States, the very first thing that anybody would get would be a washing service, because we didn't have washing machines. We didn't have any of the technology we do today to wash our own clothes. So the very first thing you would do if a family had any money at all was to hire someone to do their washing. And of course, at that time, very, very soon after the Civil War, the people that were doing it were almost entirely African-American women. And so they would do the washing. And down in Atlanta, at some point, they got fed up with their conditions and the wages. And I mean, they worked hard for their money. And at some point, they got fed up. And the local government said, basically, tough, you know, live with it. We don't care. We don't care about your plight. And they sent a letter, actually, to the mayor saying, basically, look, you're going to double our wages, or there will be no washing. You will not have clean clothes. And guess what? They won.
Amazing, right?
Yes, very, very cool. Especially again, so soon after the Civil War. Yeah.
And also, you want to talk about the Triangle fire.
Yeah, so 1911, it was actually March 25th, so the anniversary is coming up. 143 people perished. I think that's the number. Perished that day. Almost entirely women, almost entirely immigrant women, and a number of them under the age of 18, child labor, basically. And it was one of those factories where in New York, where it was absolutely sweatshop conditions. And a fire broke out pretty quickly, engulfed the place in flames. And they actually, this is just like recently happened overseas in India.
Right.
The doors were locked, so they could not escape. The elevators stopped working. The fire escape broke while they tried to get out the fire escape. You know, the only very few people escaped from the roof, by going all the way to the roof and jumping to the surrounding buildings. And some of those people were actually the owners of the place. The crazy story about that is, if you look at it later, the people who died. I mean, this ended up with 80,000 people walking down the streets of New York in protest of conditions like this, because this wasn't unique. This was not a unique situation. It was happening all over the place. So 80,000 people marched in protest 10 days later. That actually ended up being 350,000 people who marched in the funeral procession for all these people, which is incredible. I mean, imagine that today, right? I mean, imagine those kind of numbers turning out for something like that. And then a really cool substory of that is that Frances Perkins, who was an inspector of buildings and such, she came, I think, the next day or the same day to inspect what happened. She ended up being appointed by FDR's administration to head the Department of Labor, and the first woman to be in a cabinet. And she took the lessons of that with her. And when the National Labor Relations Act was enacted in 1934, she applied some of that knowledge of what happened to helping draft that legislation so that people, you know, for example, so that working people could walk out if there was unsafe working conditions, that kind of thing.
We're talking with Brandon Weber about his book, Class War USA, Dispatches from Workers' Struggles in American History. When you write a book like this, what are you hoping to accomplish?
I think, you know, the fight back spirit of this, of when unions and working people got together and said, we're not going to take this anymore, that's what I was hoping to capture with this. In addition to, again, you know, stories about working people are rarely told. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to get that out there in the world and help people understand what kind of struggles we've gone through and what it takes sometimes to win. I mean, we are in a time when unions are under attack. We have been in several points in the past, but this has been pretty extreme. This is pretty severe that we're under right now. And I'm not certain it's going to get any better without a lot of these kinds of struggles. In fact, I'm sure of it. It's not going to get better without us fighting. And I don't believe it's going to mean fighting in the streets, but guess what? There were times in our history when that's exactly what had to happen.
I was Joe Hill, the story of Joe Hill, and the role that music played in the movement was no small thing. It brought people together, and it gave people words and music to that united them.
That's right. That's right. And I mean, Joe Hill, he was a union organizer as well as a musician and a poet. And I wanted to open the book with Joe Hill, and then I closed the book with Woody Guthrie, another of Labor's musicians. And so, yeah, I mean, that I think we need more of that. I mean, there's a few these days, Billy Bragg, one of them. There's a couple others out there in the world, but nothing on the scale of both of these gentlemen. And they inspired people. We'd go to a rally or strike action, and they would get people going with the music that they played. And I think we could use more of that today.
The culture in general. You know, you the culture matters, and if you're in the and if you're in the sensibility of the culture, I think that in the last 10 years since you and I have known each other, and I think we've known each other about 10 years. We met at an AFL-CIO event, and at that time, public popularity for unions was at 43%, and it's now at 62%, which tells us. Which tells us something, right? It tells us about the importance of being in the culture and talking to people about who we are.
It does. And I think that's, I mean, one of the reasons why younger people today, obviously, there was the Great Recession that deeply affected their financial future for the rest of their lives. That got them thinking about unions. But also, I think that there is a spirit among young people today that when they hear about these things, they go, my God, that's what we need to do right now. We need to do these things. We need to organize. We need to get people involved in union activity. And to even, I mean, look at Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I mean, younger people like that are inspiring and that run for office and win.
There is two things I want. We've got just about a couple of minutes left. The first thing is I am amazed by your Facebook following. You've got like thousands and thousands and thousands of people following you on Facebook. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And how do our members get the book?
So I don't like to. There's one major supplier of books that I don't like to direct business to, and everybody knows the name because of their work policy with their workers. So Barnes & Noble, or if you want to go directly to Haymarket Books and look for the name Class War USA, and with my name, Brandon Weber with 1B, that's where you can find it.
And you have a website?
I do not. I long ago abandoned the concept of websites only because it takes so much to keep them going. So my Facebook page is my primary. I've also got a Twitter following, but the Facebook page is about 680,000 fans right now. And I'm going to say a third of those are union-oriented people.
Brandon Weber is spelled with 1B. He is on Facebook talking to folks every day about the struggles working folks face. The book is called Class War USA, Dispatches from Workers' Struggles in American History. It's from Haymarket Book. Brandon Weber, thank you very much for being with us. And you can come back anytime and talk to us about anything you want.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have this evening. I want to thank our guests, City Council Environmental Protection Committee Chair Costa Constantinides and Brandon Weber for joining us this evening. A couple of announcements before we go. If you're having trouble erasing your federal student debt, get help by attending a workshop on Tuesday, April 16th at 5:30 p.m. at Union Headquarters. Register at www.dc37.net/student-debt. And the Municipal Employees Housing Program holds a housing seminar for first-time home buyers and for those refinancing their home on Thursday, April 25th at 5:30 p.m. at Union Headquarters. Want to say happy birthday to Rudy Orozco, who is the producer. Andrea Minocchio is the engineer. I'm Chris Policano. Till next time, ciao.